The devastation in the Amazon rainforest is being heard across the Atlantic, where leaders of the G7 nations are close to an agreement on how to help fight those fires. French President Emmanuel Macron said they're finalizing a possible deal on technical and financial help, but he did not go into details. A record number of fires are ravaging the Amazon, killing wildlife and leaving destruction in the world's largest tropical rainforest.
As many U.S. states have moved to legalize marijuana, the federal government has refused to play along, with cannabis still outlawed on the national level. But there are new signs that the wall is beginning to crack. The Obama administration said back in 2016 that it would sign up more growers, but the DEA hasn't taken action under President Trump until now. Researchers say it limits their ability to learn about the potential benefits of 100 chemical compounds contained in the drug.
Beyond Meat may have a blockbuster partnership on its hands. Fast food giant KFC will begin testing Beyond Meat's plant-based chicken nuggets and boneless wings at a location in Atlanta. KFC parent Yum Brands says it will use customer feedback to determine how it will roll out the meat alternative nationwide. Beyond Meat can already be found on menu boards at Dunkin' Donuts, Subway, and Tim Hortons, but a partnership with KFC will be its first chicken alternative.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's August the 27th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. Lots to cover this morning, including the latest news from the world of the markets. We'll check those out momentarily. We'll keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports and traffic as we move through the hour. On the broadcast today, we're going to be focusing in on cybersecurity. Shannon Vavra will join us momentarily from cyberscoop.com. We're going to talk a little bit about the Army Cyber Command and how it may soon want a new identity. It wants a new identity, may have a soon have a new name. We'll tell you why all of this impacts you as we move forward this morning. We'll bring in Shannon momentarily in our first segment. A little bit later in the program, you heard recently of the raids, the ICE raids on Mississippi, on workplaces in Mississippi. There are other raids across the country. What's this doing to the Latino population in the United States? Anxiety is high, and there's a greater risk of anxiety moving forward as well. We'll talk to one of the lead researchers from the University of Illinois about this in our second segment this morning at about 5:38. So stay tuned as we move on. First, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Futures point to a flat open on Wall Street. Dow futures are up, down just fractionally now, off about 12 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are off fractionally as well. As we look around the rest of the globe, in Asia, markets are generally in the green. The Nikkei in Tokyo ending the day up 195 points, nearly a full percent. In Hong Kong, lower by a fraction. And China up by nearly a percent and a third. In Europe, after a holiday yesterday in London, the FTSE off nearly 27 points this morning, nearly a third. The DAX in Germany is off nearly a fraction, nearly a point and a half this morning. So just fractionally lower. In France, off by nearly 2 points, fractionally lower as well. And in the U.S., oil is at $54.22 a barrel. Some stories as we begin this morning. A judge is ruling that Johnson & Johnson must pay $572 million to the state of Oklahoma for misleading marketing for opioids. Judge Thad Balkman said in court yesterday that the pharmaceutical company created a nuisance and that the state has met its burden. The judge said that the nation's opioid crisis is in an imminent danger and menace to Oklahomans. Johnson & Johnson was the only defendant in the seven-week trial, which began on May 28th. Purdue Pharma and Teva Pharmaceuticals each reached a settlement with the Oklahoma Attorney General's office before the trial began. The lawsuit claimed the practice contributed to 6,000 deaths in 2 years and has cost that state as much as $17.5 billion. The state has said it wants to use the money for addiction treatment and prevention program. You can bet that other states have been watching the verdict of this case as well. You heard in the opening montage, KFC partnering with Beyond Meat to roll out Beyond Fried Chicken, a plant-based substitute for poultry. The nuggets and boneless wings will only be tested in the Atlanta market for now. Customers will get a free sample and be asked for feedback. Several fast food restaurants have hitched on to the meatless wagon recently, including Subway's, Subway, Burger King, and Carl's Jr. Oil prices up as Washington comments from Washington and Beijing about prospects for trade peace have calmed markets. As we mentioned, oil in the United States up just a little bit. West Texas Intermediate up 30 cents a barrel. International benchmark crude is up about 25 cents. So we'll be watching oil as we move forward this morning as well. And Dollar Tree and Dollar General, the two stores, will pay the state of New York $1.2 million for selling expired over-the-counter drugs. The state attorney general said an investigation found that some drugs were months beyond their expiration dates. It's also fined Dollar General for selling motor oil not suitable for engines built after 1930. And this is a case that other states are watching as well, and we're likely to see similar suits in other states against Dollar General and Dollar Tree. Let's begin this morning with the business of cybersecurity. It's currently called the U.S. Army Cyber Command, but if one of the commanders of that unit gets his way, it'll be called the Army Information Warfare Command. What does this mean to you? And what's the impact of this on our fighting forces? Let's bring in this morning Shannon Vavro, who's a cybersecurity reporter at CyberScoop, to talk a little bit more about this. Shannon, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, the question right out of the bat is why are we focusing in on this? Why does this name change? Why are they looking for this name change? Is it because their mission has changed?
So what's really exciting and significant about this is it's not really the name change that's important. It's the fact that behind the scenes this is going to, or it's intended to, fundamentally change how the Army operates. So there's a whole reorganization drumming up traction behind the scenes, I'm told. It's intended to put cybersecurity professionals, so electronic warfare experts, information warfare practitioners, psychological operations practitioners, with each commander in the Army at every level, like brigade, division, and the Corps. And it's not necessarily a mission change. It's just what I'm told is that it's the Army sort of returning to what it is supposed to be doing in this Army Cyber Command, which is an Army Service Component Command playing a role in training, equipping, and resourcing for the Army writ large.
Is it because they've been doing other things recently that sort of don't fall into that mission that they have had in the past? And I know that they've been dealing a lot recently with social media, disrupting ISIS operations as well with the cyber attacks. Talk to us a little bit about that mission and how it has changed over the years.
Right. So if we go back to thinking about what Army Cyber Command is intended to do, it was only stood up within the last decade along with Cyber Command in 2009 and 2010. So it's responsible for a whole host of things. There are cyber components, which has been doing that for a while. But the big picture is it's also supposed to be doing psychological operations, military deception, operational security, computer network operations, and electronic warfare, which is this represents basically Army Cyber Command kind of getting back to the basics of what it's supposed to be doing. It's, you know, even military cyber commanders over at Fort Meade have told me and other reporters that Cyber Command is a maturing force, and this is kind of a representation of that. It's a recognition that Army Cyber Command has to evolve kind of as the days go by.
Yeah, because I think most of us who are older will remember the other name for that is the disinformation campaign. That's the part of the Army that wages that disinformation campaign.
Right, so it shows us kind of how pivotal Army Cyber Command is supposed to be, at least that's what it's called now before the name change switches over to Army Information Warfare Command. It shows us how pivotal it is over at the Pentagon and how important information operations will be in warfare moving forward, right? Cyber troops at the Pentagon are dealing with troll farms in social media now, right? They're disrupting ISIS operations. They're trying to confuse adversaries' understanding of where the U.S. military is located. And so that's all important here, but the issue is that the Army hasn't necessarily been providing sort of troops with each commander to allow them to have that sort of consistent access to psychological operations or military deception. So this is trying to remedy that, make it a little bit faster.
Yeah, it sounds completely reasonable as you explain it. What kinds of challenges do they face in making the change, if it's even going to be made?
Yeah, so lately the Army has been having some trouble doing just this reorganization. So this isn't a brand new concept. The Army's been working on it for a little bit. They've already been trying to work in some electronic warfare units into different levels of the Army at, you know, brigade and corps levels. But the Government Accountability Office just a couple weeks ago released a report showing that Army Cyber Command specifically has been standing up these units too quickly without managing the training and equipping needs simultaneously. And for example, in December last year, there was a new unit called the Cyber Warfare Support Battalion that's intended to have expeditionary cyber teams that are these sort of embeds with different teams in the Army. But by March of 2019, the unit was understaffed by more than 80%. So the Army has a long way to go. But from what I hear from folks who are involved in the process, this is the farthest along in the military in terms of bringing in that cyber component.
Shannon, this your reporting on this is exceptional in the sense that it kind of shows, and you've kind of explained here this morning how this is important to everybody. If we are not at our best, whether it's in actual fighting with guns and weapons, in this case with information or disinformation, as it may be, we're a little bit we potentially have ourselves out there. And I know one of the commanders talks about how we're already behind other countries in doing this.
Right. And so Lieutenant General Stephen Fogarty, he's the chief of Army Cyber Command. He's saying that there's a concern that we are not having decisive advantage on the battlefield when it comes to these sort of psychological operations. It used to be called PSYOPs, now it's called MISO, or information warfare now, compared to adversaries. He gave a couple examples of concerns that he has that the adversary may be moving more quickly than the U.S. at this point. And so, you know, one of the concerns the Government Accountability Office had was that the Army was moving too quickly. And while he didn't address that concern specifically, he did stress time and time again that speed is of the essence at this time.
Shannon, I was curious. You mentioned something earlier in our conversation about how Cyber Command has been working lately to disrupt troll farms on social media. I know folks probably recognize that term, what we're talking about. After the 2016 election, the troll farms were pretty busy with a disinformation campaign. How do actual military forces help to disrupt some of these activities?
Right, it's a good question. So Lieutenant General Stephen Fogarty, who announced the hope that Army Cyber Command will get a new name moving forward and more focused on information operations, described the evening of the 8th of November of 2016, where he, you know, wrote to the audience in TechNet in Augusta, Georgia last week, and he said, "What were you all doing on the 8th of November?" And we all know that, you know, that was, we were all thinking about the election. And he said, "We were working on one of the largest offensive cyber operations the Department of Defense had ever done." He was in the Joint Operations Center in Fort Meade, preparing to conduct what he called a complex offensive operation against ISIS. And while he didn't go into much detail, we do know that that is part of why the Army Cyber Command is interested in getting a name change and refocusing on bringing in information operations into every level of the Army, into brigade units and corps and divisions.
Yeah, I'm struck, too, because I think some of our listeners might remember a number of years ago there was a malware placed inside of a centrifuge, I believe, in Iran, where the nuclear activities were going on, and it disrupted that activity. Is that something also that we would see Cyber Command working on?
So that is it. That's a possibility. Obviously, there's a lot of overlap between the National Security Agency and Cyber Command on that level, right? So there's a balance between what the National Security Agency does and what Cyber Command does. They operate under different authorities. Cyber Command is more, if you really want to break it down to basics, that sort of military operations like defending outside of Department of Defense networks, whereas NSA is back to its traditional roots, focused more on that espionage. And so kind of the blending of what Cyber Command and the NSA do together could touch on some of that. And I think that the U.S. government has never acknowledged straightforward their involvement in that operation. But that's a possibility for sure.
Yeah, I know. This is still one of the big, it may even be a total rumor, but we know something happened and it was never really decided who was responsible for it. So, Shannon, as we wrap up our conversation here, when do we see maybe something happening with this name change or a little bit of a change in mission statement, if that's the best way to describe this? What's the timeline here?
Yeah, so Lieutenant General Stephen Fogarty, he's focused on the next 2 months kind of bringing this proposal up the chain of command at the Pentagon. So over the next 2 months, I'll be pushing the name change. But as far as the operational changes go and putting in different cyber professionals at each level of the Army, that could take many months. The Army's already been working on it for a while. Lieutenant General Fogarty described a conversation he had with H.R. McMaster a while ago about doing this. And so we know then that this isn't going on for many months. And he admitted this is going to take a while and it's going to take on many different forms and that maybe we don't know the best way to do this yet. So we're likely going to see many iterations of how this works out, especially given the fact that the GAO has sort of reprimanded the Army and given some recommendations for how to better staff and equip quickly as these changes take place.
Yeah, and all this is coming, too, as your story notes, as they physically move, too. They're changing locations, aren't they?
Yes, so Army Cyber Command is moving to Fort Gordon, Georgia. And that was always the plan, right? So in the last decade, Army Cyber Command and Cyber Command were stood up, and they were co-located with the National Security Agency, sort of in the D.C., Washington, D.C. area, to grow and learn with the NSA on how to sort of work on these cybersecurity operations. But they're moving. So that's expected to kind of be a little more operational in June of next year, and it's going to include an operations center, an information operations center.
All right. Shannon, we appreciate you coming on and sharing your reporting with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Shannon Vavra, cybersecurity reporter at CyberScoop. You can find more of her reporting, and we'll link out to the latest story at cyberscoop.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to The Opening Bell on our Tuesday edition of the program. New research from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign shows the stress of migration and the fear of deportation is associated with greater prenatal anxiety in Latina immigrants. The release of this research comes the same month that the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency launched raids across the country, including a large raid in Mississippi, where nearly 700 undocumented immigrants were rounded up. Joining us this morning to talk about the research is Dr. Sandra Luz Laura Cinesomo, an assistant professor of kinesiology and community health at the University of Illinois. Dr. Laura Cinesomo, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you for having me.
Talk to us a little bit first about the focus of this research specifically. You looked at specifically the prenatal health situation here and the anxiety involved. What's the significance of what you have found?
So it's important because anxiety in the prenatal period can increase the risk of premature births, but also it can have lasting effects for the mother and the infant. And so we thought it was going to be important to understand some of these stressors that immigrant, particularly undocumented immigrant women, might be experiencing during pregnancy and postpartum.
Give us a sense of what some of those impacts might be. How might they manifest themselves?
Anxiety is definitely an important mental health factor to consider because it can affect the woman's ability to not only care for herself, but care for her infant. And anxiety is important because it's the fear of what might happen. It can also be associated with depression. So we also looked at depression in this study, which we didn't find was significant. It was really anxiety that was more important for this population that we studied.
You know, the immediate thing one would think about is let's remove the anxiety. Let's stop having that anxiety there. That's easier said than done, isn't it? Almost every day in our newscast and everywhere, this information is just being bombarded on immigrants and undocumented immigrants. And the stress seems to be getting worse, not better.
That's right. And even though our sample showed similar numbers to the general population and other studies that have been conducted, it's really the causes of that anxiety that is important and that we really look at. And there is limited research on Latinas, and particularly immigrant and undocumented Latinas, in terms of factors that might be affecting their mental health. And migration experiences and the current fear of deportation is an important factor to consider given the current social political climate in this country.
Talk to us a little bit about the migration experiences survey. Can we extrapolate anything from what you have found focusing on prenatal health to the general population, specifically to documented and undocumented immigrants who are being bombarded with this information? Is it likely impacting the mental health of others in other situations?
Absolutely. So the objective of this new migration survey was to understand what was the experience of these women coming into the country. There is a lot of criticism and talk about undocumented immigrants, but there's very little done to understand their experience to help us figure out what we can do to be supportive and to make sure that we can minimize the negative effects, short-term and long-term. And there are different ways that people can enter this country, and they're not always easy, and it's important to appreciate the efforts and the sacrifice that these immigrants are making to improve not just their lives for themselves, but their for their family. And so when we're thinking about these potential raids and the raids that are in place or have recently happened, it's important to consider how this might affect the mental health of that individual, but also their family. We found that women who had higher prenatal anxiety were afraid for themselves, but also for family members. And so there's this constant threat, and even the fear of that they had when they were entering the U.S. persists long term. So there are these lasting effects that we need to appreciate. And this can be true for immigrants from all over the world, not just Latinas. So the fear of deportation is something that is real for undocumented immigrants from Asia, Africa, Europe, and Latin America.
We on this program focus on the economy and the economics of some of the questions and issues that we deal with. Roughly 10 million undocumented immigrants in the United States. You mentioned the impact on family members as well. There was one estimate that there's nearly 17 million people in the United States have at least one undocumented immigrant in their household. So it's quite a few million, maybe 30 million people that are impacted by this conversation that we're having today. And there's sort of an economic anxiety that goes along with this. People don't realize the number of undocumented and just regular immigrants, too, who are in the workforce, maybe they're permanent residents, that have this anxiety about going to work and doing their jobs every day.
Yeah, especially when racial profiling is so high, and particularly in some areas like maybe in Chicago, where it's one of five states that has a high proportion of immigrants and potentially undocumented immigrants, and you're thinking about what is the community experiencing, and it can impact an entire family, as you suggested. And it's something that we talked about in the interviews with these women. They talked about being afraid to drive to work, or when their spouse or parent was driving to work and they were afraid that they were going to be stopped by police due to racial profiling, that would have some long-term consequences like deportation or detention. So this fear and anxiety can definitely be pervasive, and it can have intergenerational effects. And we're just starting to understand anxiety in the prenatal woman, but even more so, we're just hitting the surface when we're thinking about deportation fears. And now is the time for us to fully understand the short-term and long-term consequences of these threats.
Is there any, and I know we're hearing anecdotal evidence about it as we do reporting on this and others do reporting on this, that there are some folks who are not even going to work. They're scared to go to work because they're afraid they might be caught up in a raid. They have family members that are in that situation as well. And then, you know, we are not talking about children who are already here, who have already been born. The impact on some of the children, for instance, in Mississippi, we saw front and center with some just heart-wrenching video of kids who didn't know if their parents were coming home after work. This is impacting kids as well.
Absolutely. And in fact, much of the research is in terms of when we're looking at deportation fears or migration-related fears has focused on adolescents and children, which is important because they may be victims of these different consequences of having an immigrant or undocumented parent. But it's also important to study the women and the parents involved in these situations because it can have intergenerational effects, but also if children feel that they have no control or that there's unpredictability, it can definitely increase the child's anxiety. So we're really talking about not just an individual level effect, but a family level effect. And as you said, the whole community can be impacted negatively, but there are things that we can do to decrease that, and the Migration Experiences Survey is a first step in that direction in understanding what are the effects, what are the fears, and how are they associated with mental health so that we can intervene and provide resources and support, but also so that we can try to predict potential negative effects of, for example, raids or racial profiling.
In a situation where it feels like this is something that most of us have no ability to stop, that we're just watching it unfold and we have no power over it. How does that then translate into a way of dealing with this? And what would your advice be? And what has been the advice of experts in terms of making this anxiety a little less?
One important thing to remember is that we can do something, and getting engaged in your community, but also getting engaged in research to help us understand these effects is important. The other thing that we can do is have appreciation for the sacrifice that these families are making to try to improve their family's livelihood and secure long-term well-being for themselves. Making a huge sacrifice to come to this country is something that we underestimate, and thinking about ways to support these families is something that we should all consider. For example, just acknowledging the fact that entering the U.S. as an undocumented immigrant can have financial implications, mental health implications, that this is a sacrifice these families are willing to make for the improvement of them themselves, but also their families. And so another thing we can do is help these individuals kind of anticipate potential fears or anxiety that they might experience by providing resources and support. In terms of mental health, we're just starting to understand how anxiety plays out in the prenatal phase, and health providers, community workers are important resources to help us reach that community of immigrant and undocumented Latinas who may be pregnant and feeling isolated, because isolation is a huge risk factor for poor mental health. The fear of not having any control in your life is definitely a risk factor for poor mental health as well.
Well, Dr. Lara Sinisomo, thank you for being with us this morning, sharing your research. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for your interest, Steve.
Dr. Sandra Luz Lara Sinisomo, Assistant Professor of Kinesiology and Community Health at the University of Illinois, will link out to the latest research on the fears of deportation among migrant communities, among some undocumented, even documented migrants, immigrants to the United States, with the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later this morning at WGNradio.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are flat this morning heading to The Opening Bell. Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures up just a couple of points each, just fractionally higher this morning. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Let me send out a good morning to the people listening to us this morning on their car radios around the Midwest heading for the Farm Progress Show. Today is the big day, the opening day at the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois. It'll be a three-day show. It winds up on Thursday, the middle day of the show, Wednesday. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue will be there. Also that day will be several state directors of agriculture from around the country who will be coming to tour the biggest outdoor farm show, the granddaddy of them all, that started back in 1953. Max Armstrong and I will be there throughout the show, Max appearing at various locations. I'll be at the University of Illinois display every morning at 10 o'clock with the opportunity to question market analysts and traders to get an idea of what they think of this crop year and, of course, this market year. That'll be every day at 10 o'clock. And then at noon every day, Max and I will be together on the ADM stage at the entertainment tent doing radio shows and putting together our weekly television show. Incidentally, speaking of crop conditions, USDA yesterday increased its good to excellent rating for the corn crop by 1 percentage point, 57% now good to excellent, and they raised its soybean rating by 2 points to 55% in that weekly report. So once again, be careful driving to the show. We'll be flying in and air Orion shortly after this report. Look forward to seeing a lot of you there today, tomorrow, and Thursday. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
A couple of other stories before we leave you this morning. French President Emmanuel Macron is calling for a new global economic order, decrying an unprecedented crisis in the market economy amid uncertainty over U.S. trade policies. The French president says the market economy has become too finance-driven, creating inequalities that, in his words, are shaking up our political order. He's calling for a global rethink, but not offering details in a sweeping diplomatic speech yesterday. Macron says that we are living in the end of Western hegemony in the world, in part because of Western errors, in his words, over the past centuries. More than 20,000 AT&T workers in 9 southern states went on strike over the weekend, saying that the telecommunications company isn't bargaining in good faith over a new contract. The union, the Communication Workers of America, says that means AT&T isn't sending negotiators who have the authority to make decisions. AT&T says that it is prepared for a strike when asked if there will be service interruptions for customers elsewhere in the country. Volvo Cars performance electric brand, the Polestar, has opened a factory in western China to produce a gas electric hybrid for export to the Europe and the United States. Polestar CEO Thomas Ingelhaff says exports of the two-door carbon fiber Polestar 1 coupe started this year to Europe. Price is about $165,000. Exports to the United States could begin sometime next year. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Tuesday, August the 27th. The economic spotlight is on home prices today. The Case-Shiller Home Price and U.S. House Price Index for June are due out. Housing industry analysts forecast a 0.4% increase over May's prices in the Case-Shiller 20 City Index. The U.S. House Index focuses on mortgages guaranteed by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The experts see that metric gaining 0.3%. Just a couple of things that could move the markets today on this Tuesday, August the 27th.